From an undisclosable location for reasons of security and therefore insecurity. Cometh the hour, cometh the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome to the Saturday night edition. John D. Wells, delighted to be sitting in with you. And I say this every weekend, but it seems like an eternity since we've been together. I'm all over the place tonight, as usual, because, well, I find that too much organization compromises dynamics, you know. We have a program I believe that you will like. First hour, Joseph Meyer. We're going to talk about gold and some other things. The economic situation, just because we haven't talked about it every moment of our lives, is not improving. It really isn't. And so we'll chat with him. And then Paul Stamets, the Mushroom Man. Now, I know what you're thinking. John B., why? We're in this handbasket and we really don't know where we're going. And why are we talking about mushrooms? Ho, ho, ho. You ain't heard nothing yet until you've heard what Paul Stamets has to tell you. I'm looking at about an 8-inch thick stack of his books. Oh, yeah. I know. What, like psilocybin mushrooms? It's like, yeah, we'll get into that. Not barefooted and just the mushrooms, not the actual little cow patty that they grow from, but mycomedicinals, psilocybin mushrooms of the world, mycelium running, growing gourmet and medicinal mushrooms, the mushroom cultivator. But this is not about gardening. This is heavy-duty stuff. This is about, you know, in the broad strokes, what it is about tonight with Paul is scientific discrimination. Because it's the same thing in the scientific community as it is in every other community, to use that unfortunate, overworked, and like borderline nauseating term. The big dogs who control, nobody wants to relinquish control once they have it, and they fight to maintain it. They really, really do. Okay, let me be brief, because we only got an hour with Joseph. A couple things. The Coast Fast Blast apparatus is up and running. If you want to shoot one of those over to me, that's fine. Now, I got one for you. No immediate risk. That's in quotes. Nuclear waste tank leaking in Washington. One of the most contaminated waste sites in America is leaking nuclear waste, according to U.S. officials. The Hanford Nuclear Reservation stores material from the production of atomic weapons in tanks which have done outlive their 20-year lifespan. Or you mean 20 years has already gone by? Yeah. The nuclear leak is the first confirmed case of this type since the federal government's introduction of a security program in 05 to dispose of content from exposed single-shell tanks. On Friday, the U.S. Department of Energy announced that one of Hanford's 177 radioactive waste tanks is disposing up to 300 gallons per year. The leaks have come from tank TM-111 built between 43 and 44. I mean, you get that? Between 1943 and 1944, now holding some 447,000 gallons of highly radioactive slurry left from plutonium production of nuclear arms. Anyway, the governor of the state was completely outraged by the announcement and said, "I'm alarmed about this on many levels." And this is Washington's governor, Jay Inslee. He said in a news conference, "This raises concerns not only about the existing leak, but also concerns the integrity of the other single-shell tanks of this age." This is why every once in a while I tell you to come see me at caravantomidnight.com. You're going to fool around. The same thing's going to happen with these radiation detectors that happened with firearms and ammunition. You go into any gun store now or sporting goods place, and it looks like the gun and ammo locusts came through and emptied everything. Everybody's operating at maximum production, not so much because everybody is preparing for peace, but there just seems to be a pervasive feeling that something big is about to happen in the U.S., so we shall hope that it's not anything really, really stupid, because we don't want that. I mean, there are some people that sit around with their beanie weenies and their MREs and their deer rifles and a case of beer there somewhere just waiting for Armageddon, man. You're not supposed to do that anyway. You're supposed to live as though you're preparing an inheritance for your great-grandchildren, so just keep your heads. I know you will, and everything will be fine. Now then, this is interesting. At least 20 CIA prisoners are still missing. And nearly 450 British military drones are lost in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then, of course, there's ENE News. The NASA says the Russian meteor was actually a tiny asteroid believed to be from a belt between Mars and Jupiter. It's just It's just amazing. Catch some of these little headlines. The fireballs are reported in the skies above Cuba and California. The meteor watchdog group says these fireballs happen all the time, all over the place. It does not suggest a big event. And that big thing that happened in Russia yesterday, they're cleaning up after the impact, injured more than 1,000 people, busted windows all over the place. And the numbers, comparing it to, making an unfortunate comparison to the Hiroshima blast of the 1945, is like 250 times more powerful than that bomb, or 2.5 times. I mean, the statistics are all over the place. So it was big, and just be glad it didn't, you know, land any closer and perhaps in your yard. How about this? Facebook is getting a multi-billion-dollar tax break. Why am I not surprised? Russian's foreign minister still hasn't called Mr. Kerry back. And their nuclear bombers are circling Guam because, I don't know, perhaps they perceive some sort of weakness. I can't imagine why they're doing such a thing. Anyway, let's depart from this momentarily. I will be with you next Friday night. I want to tell you about this now in case you have to bail. And you won't be able to listen to the announcement if it were to come later. But in an effort to completely and totally vaporize the left-right paradigm, have we got a plan for you? We will do Naked Lines, of course, on Friday night, which is our tradition and so forth. But I have a surprise for you, and I think you're going to like it quite a lot. I really do. The last little note here, please go to the coasttocoastam.com website and find out why almost everyone in Russia has a dash cam. Denver airport parking lots under siege by rabbits. The guy who discovered the truth about tree rings. The truth about tree rings. I'm looking forward to that. And some other things. You'll find them very, very interesting, each and every article. Okay, let's get ready for Joseph Meyer. He's got some stuff to lay on us. If you care about money, I mean, mesta se. Money will not necessarily bring you happiness, but lack of money most definitely will bring you great unhappiness. All right. Here we go. On the count of one. One. All right. Well, the last time that I was able to speak with you and Joseph Meyer was July 10th, 2011. That's just way too long to talk to my favorite money man without further ado. Joseph Meyer, where have you been and what's going on? Welcome back, sir.
Good evening, John. Thank you and Coast to Coast for having me this evening. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience, John.
Well, it goes both ways. And I'll tell you, the money concerns certainly have not gone away, have they?
No, they haven't.
So tell us where we are. Tell us what's going on. This, you know, nobody really knows what to do, Joseph. And the thing is that this seems like a rudimentary question, but how about it? Explain to everybody, including myself, what is money? I've heard everything from it's a social compact, which of course it is. It's a medium of exchange. Yes, it's leverage. It's isn't a just lay it on us because we've only got an hour.
All right, let me give a very simple explanation as to what is money. Money is a medium of exchange that can be exchanged for goods or services and used as a measure of their value or the market, including among its forms, a commodity such as gold.
Okay. Now, people are talking about trying to convert their 401ks to gold and so forth. So rather than have everybody think, Joseph's just in the gold business, he just wants us to buy gold. It's like, tell us why this is important. And in fact, tell us who's holding the gold, the large gold reserves in the world, and maybe that'll give everybody a clue.
Well, I think when you talk as to the largest gold reserves by nation, John, there's 10 nations that hold primarily all the world's gold reserves. Number one would be the United States. Number two would be Germany. Number three would be the IMF fund. Number four would be Italy. Number five, France. Number six, China. Number seven, Switzerland. Number eight, Russia. Number nine, Japan. And number 10, the Netherlands.
Okay. Now, who's going to return to the gold standard? Because it seems like somebody's got to do it. It just seems inevitable that somebody tries it.
I believe it'll be the United States, and I believe that, John, for four reasons. As you know, the United States is now the only world superpower left. Number two, China's holding about $1.5 trillion in U.S.-denominated assets. China is our main trading partner and probably will continue to be in the foreseeable future. Thirdly, the U.S. has the largest gold reserves of any nation, approximately 9,000 tons of gold. And fourthly, and I think equally as important, Japan's holding about $1 trillion of U.S. debt in the form of treasury securities.
What does this actually mean to people, just in the listening audience, people don't even know what those securities are or what they do or what kind of an instrument it is?
They're government indebtedness, John. That's exactly what they are.
That's all it is, isn't it?
U.S. government indebtedness, yes.
Okay, let's take a little side trip here. Should I be worried about a default with this unbelievable debt that we have?
Well, the debt is currently becoming unserviceable, and at some point we're going to run into some very serious trouble. Few people realize and understand that the national debt when Ronald Reagan became president was less than $1 trillion. As you know, we're currently approaching $17 trillion.
Yes.
So this debt is unsustainable, and at some point we're going to have to take some action to certainly prevent it from going any higher, John.
Is there any action that can be taken? I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball. I mean, if anybody's got one, you do. But if there's a problem, what does that mean? Does it mean the government closes down? Does it mean people won't get their checks? Does it mean the banks close? I mean, what does it mean?
I think it means all of that. And I think people fail to understand the U.S. currently borrows 50 cents of every dollar it spends, John.
Is that all? Only half?
Well, 50 cents of every dollar it's currently spending is borrowed money.
That doesn't sound very good to me.
And the problem we have now are the Chinese are reluctant, as well as the Japanese are, to continue to buy our debt. And our central bank, the Federal Reserve, is monetizing our debt. And at some point, this has to end. And I think in the foreseeable future, that's exactly what's going to happen. But I think when you talk in the bigger picture of what's going on, certainly globally, when we speak to gold, the central banks of the world have pumped $10 trillion into the global economy just since 2008. And the global economy, when we talk about the recovery, still remains very fragile at best. As you know, the U.S. was on a gold standard from 1944 to 1971, which was a period of 27 years. In 1971, gold was trading for $40 per ounce. It's currently trading at $1,610 per ounce. We were also on the gold standard for just 27 years, but we've been off of it now for 42 years. But gold during this period has risen by a multiple of 40 times, John. And equally important, most Americans at this point still own very little gold, unlike the Europeans who remember what happened to Germany after World War I in the 1920s, which led to a hyperinflationary depression. And interesting, at the height of the depression in Germany, a one-ounce gold coin bought a whole city block in Frankfurt, Germany. Gold is the storage of value. It doesn't have any counterparty risk, and it's no one's debt.
That's unbelievable to me, and it seems as though an economic collapse, no matter how sophisticated the society, inevitably results in at least a shot taken by the politicians at what amounts to a totalitarian regime.
Very true.
Every time. All right, then. So let's say you want to buy a bunch of gold, just a bunch of gold coins. First of all, what kind of gold coins are you getting? Are they 18 karat? Are they real soft? Are they 24? Are they 14? I mean, I don't know about any of this stuff. I really don't.
You want to buy bullion coins, and you want to buy the most popular gold coins and or silver coins so that they're very easy to sell when the time comes in which you want to sell them. I can name quickly the five most popular gold and the five most popular silver coins for your listening audience, John.
Please do.
All right. The number one gold coin is the American Gold Eagle. Then you'd have number two, the South African Krugerrand. Number three, the Canadian Gold Maple Leaf. Number four, the Austrian Philharmonic. And number five, the Chinese Panda. When you talk about the five most popular silver coins, you'd have the silver American Eagle, silver Canadian Maple Leaf, AMPAC silver rounds, which are from the American Precious Metal Exchanges, Morgan silver dollars, and then lastly, Austrian silver Philharmonic silver coin.
Okay.
All right. Those are the most popular. But ideally, when you want to participate in the precious metals, you want to buy your coin first, then your bullion, and then you want to buy the highest quality precious metal mining shares, buy them and put them away for long-term appreciation.
Okay, let's say that something really stupid happens with our money, our actual money. It does what the peso did in Mexico some years ago. Would you actually take gold coins to the grocery store to get a few sacks of grocery, and how would they give you your change?
Well, you know, the idea behind owning gold is twofold. Number one, it's a storage of wealth, and secondly, it's a hedge against inflation. And if we see a global systemic collapse, which if we keep piling up this debt, sooner or later it's going to happen, the idea behind owning the precious metals is so you can barter for goods and services in place of a fiat paper dollar, John.
Okay. All right. Very good.
But, you know, there's history that most people don't realize. And if you go back and you study history, over a 216-year period, and I did the research on this, 20 nations had their fiat currency fail the test of time, and I can name quickly those 20 nations, and I know you're going to recognize almost all of those names. France in 1790, Germany 1923, Greece 1943, Central Bank of China 1947, Chile 1975, Bolivia 1985, Argentina 1985, Peru 1989, Nicaragua 1990, Russia 1992, Brazil 1993, Bosnia 1993, Georgia 1994, Angola 1995, the Ukraine 1995, Belarus 1996, Turkey 1997, Romania 2001, Venezuela 2002, and Zimbabwe 2006.
I definitely recognize some of the names. And how did they recover? What did they do?
They had to form a new currency.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of science to this money game that I really don't understand, but I'm trying. Okay, let's shift over to the stock market for a second.
Sure.
It's been posting some record highs over the last few weeks. But so when the market's doing well, it's a bull market. And when it's not doing so well, that's the bear market. That's when it's rough. So how long can this go on? I remember when people were flipping out because the could the Dow go over 9,000? Could the Dow go over 10,000, up around 14 now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, when you talk about the stock market, and I'll say this first before I talk about actually what's happening in the markets. Markets often do not reflect reality. Oftentimes, it reflects belief, and belief can be delusional. And I think this market is delusional. I think when you take a look at the economics behind it, when you certainly look at the job market and you certainly look at housing and you look at a lot of areas of immediate concern, this market is trading on what I think is the premise that this economic recovery is finally going to take hold. And I'm of the belief at this point, John, that it is not.
You know, when we get into this thing about the news that we are told, it's just reported. And it's like you say, the stock market is, it runs, there's an emotional component to it. So if you're told, well, the Dow posts another high today, it's up 200 points or 300 points or whatever, that makes people feel good, and I guess they want to participate more. But when are you thinking this might end? Because it has to.
Well, you know, it's very important that we put in context that the stock market now has put in place three peaks in the averages in a period of 13 years. And this is what would constitute a triple top in the averages coming up very shortly. If you go back and you look at the previous levels in the Dow and in the S&P 500, January 14, 2000, John, the Dow reached 11,723. October 9, 2007, the Dow reached 14,164. Oof. Here we are now, February 2013. We're approaching 14,000 once again. Then
gotcha.
We talk about the S&P because that's a broader index. March 24th, 2000, S&P level 1552. October 9th, 2007, level 1565. Here we are, February 2013. We're at 1520.
Gotcha. All right, let's hold up right there and take a little break, and we'll be right back with you, Joseph. His website is straightmoneyanalysis.com. You should get his newsletter. You'll find him very valuable. This is the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. Hey, a real quick thank you to everybody who have become, I think that's correct English, maybe not. I'll check it for next time. Thanks for becoming a Coast Insider. Yes. We appreciate it very much. The radio landscape has shifted. You shifted with it, and it's a very nice service. Over 1,000 shows, 3 years of archived programs. Listen to them whenever you want. And we're very happy that you did that, and we're very happy that you enjoy the program enough to do it. All right, I'm going to make it quick. Let's take a little two-minute break and come right back with Joseph Meyer. We're going to talk about housing, and I want to ask him about bitcoins because Marty said, can't call in from Romania, but please ask your guest about bitcoins. So I will. I don't even know what they are. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Joseph Meyer, I was just looking into this bitcoin thing, this decentralized digital currency that they can be exchanged by personal computer. They can also be exchanged through physical banknotes and coins. Is that within your purview at all? I never heard about them until tonight.
Quite honestly, I've never heard of them either, but apparently, you know, this is something that's taken hold in Europe, and I think probably in the foreseeable future, this is certainly going to be something that is going to take hold globally at some point, John.
Ugh, wonder what it'll be backed by. What about all this gold that's being repatriated to Germany, for example? I think we told them we'd do it over a period of 7 months or something. Everybody seems to be circling their wagons and getting their gold back in their treasuries.
Well, you know, that's very interesting because Venezuela was the first country to request a return of their gold reserves. And Germany asked for return, I believe, of about one-third of their gold reserves. So we're starting to see the central banks of the world repatriate their gold back to their sovereign nation.
Haven't heard not much about the housing market. I understand the interest rates are still very, very low, down in the threes. But how many states are in trouble, according to your numbers, for foreclosure and so forth? And you know, what's the best? What's the worst? And should we rent? The older I get, the more rent furnished seems appealing. But you know, not going there yet.
Well, let me name the top 10 states for mortgage foreclosures, and these are the states to avoid, certainly at all costs, John.
Okay.
Nevada, California, Arizona, Georgia, Idaho, Michigan, Florida, Illinois, Colorado, and Utah. But ironically, the five best housing markets for 2013, four of them are in California. Riverside, California, Sacramento, California, San Francisco, California, and Los Angeles, California.
That's interesting. So you can have a state on the list which is high in foreclosures and yet still have a good housing market somewhere in that state.
Yes, you can, John.
Interesting. So what do you think? What about that renting furnish? Is renting a home still cheaper than owning one in the current market?
I still believe we're many years from the final bottom in housing, and the reason I believe that is I still think the banks are sitting on a shadow inventory of homes that eventually will come to the market. I think when these homes do come to the market and they're auctioned off, I think the surprise, honestly, is going to be how much little money they actually bring, John. I think these homes are going to sell for very, very little at the end of the day.
And what's it going to be like trying to get money out of the banks to put behind it?
Well, you know, the interest rates now are very, very low. But what people don't realize, going back to the old days, and I know you'll understand this, a conventional mortgage, you had to put one-third down of the purchase price, you had to be extremely creditworthy, and you had to have, at a minimum, a 10-year work history. And we're going back now to seeing very, very tight lending standards by these institutions. Yes, interest rates are very low, but it's very hard to qualify for a mortgage, Sean.
Did we altogether just build too much inventory? Is that what some of the bunch of projects were underwritten before the economic problems began to occur?
That's exactly
at the end of the Bush administration? Is that what happened?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Did you know currently we have 11 states that have more people on welfare than are currently employed? Do you know that?
No.
Would you be surprised if I named the states?
Please go ahead. And I was going to ask you if you had the list handy. I thought you might.
Alabama, California, Hawaii, Illinois, Kentucky, Maine, Mississippi, New Mexico, New York, Ohio, and South Carolina.
Well, I'm glad. I knew Texas could not be on that list.
No, it's not.
Excellent. Now, what does all of this translate to? Before I get to that question, let me ask you this. Do you have any numbers regarding the true unemployment number? Going back to what I was saying about the propaganda that you hear from mainstream media, and that's all it is. I still think these so-called journalists of today need to go ahead and decide within themselves, are they reporting the news or are they propaganda?
I have the real numbers, and I'd like to share them with you and your listening audience, John.
Please do.
These are the real economic statistics versus the bogus numbers. Now, if we go back and we calculate the statistics on unemployment and GDP and inflation, the way they were calculated in 1980,
yes,
these are what the numbers would look like. Unemployment, the official number, 7.9%, the real number, 23%. U.S. GDP, the official number, plus 1.5%, the real number, minus 2.2%. Inflation, official number, 2.6%. Real number, 10.2%.
Did you say 22%?
This economy has not recovered, John. This economic recovery is an illusion. I've called it that from day one in the newsletter, and we are years away from a prolonged, sustainable economic recovery. This market could go to 20,000. It will not create one decent-paying job.
And why is that? Why does what's happening with the stock market and so forth not translate into something good for people who are trying to work?
Well, I think you've got to look at five problems that I think are really holding this economy back, and I believe are going to continue to hold this economy back. You've got a poor job market, which is worsening with chronic high unemployment. Secondly, you've got a depressed housing market that's continuing to deteriorate. Thirdly, you have stagnant income levels coupled with a low savings rate. Fourthly, you have high levels of household debt. And fifthly, you have weak consumer spending with no pickup in sight. And they have pumped through the Federal Reserve $4 trillion into the U.S. economy since 2008. And we now have price inflation now driving food and energy prices. All they accomplished is they accelerated the misallocation of resources and further weakening of the economy. That's all they've done.
Did you leave out increased taxes?
I left that out.
I'm thinking that even with my basic calculational skills, I don't think we're going to tax our way out of this debt at all. The numbers don't work.
No.
It's totally impossible. All right, then. Take us wherever you would like to go. I mean, we can look back through history.
When I last appeared in a show going back September 25th, 2009, and we talked about the economy, and we talked about America's crumbling infrastructure, and I talked about rebuilding the infrastructure of America and creating some decent-paying jobs in the process, and we're talking now roughly over 3.5 years ago, and I outlined that night with the host 10 major projects that would create long-term employment. Not one of these projects was implemented, and I want to name them once again for your listening audience, where we could have, if we wanted to, have created some shovel-ready jobs and put some people back to work. We could have built new bridges. We could have repaired and built new dams and levees. We could have repaired and rebuilt our tunnels. We could have rebuilt and improved our highways. We could have upgraded our sewer systems. We could have upgraded our power grid to increase electricity. We could have modernized our ports. We could have updated our railroad transit system. And we could have remodeled our aging schools and universities. And we'd have had people back to work almost 4 years, John.
I got a question for you. Just a couple of guys talking here with a few million of our closest friends. why I happen to know of a highway project that's got a $5 billion price tag on it, and it went to a Chinese firm. Why is this happening? Is this, well, we'll kind of slide some multi-billion dollar jobs your way, and maybe that'll give you a better attitude toward buying our debt?
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
You know, what people don't understand, industry continues to seek out the cheapest worldwide labor. And what people further do not have an understanding of, a garment worker in China earns 86 cents an hour. In Cambodia, a worker earns just 22 cents per hour. There are no minimum wage laws in these foreign countries, John. We have now created a working poor. We've got 6 million unemployed Americans for every job opening. So globalization has been the death knell of this American economy.
Why does everybody in power, and this is really kind of general, this is almost moronic, but I'm going to launch it anyway. Why is everybody in power so obsessed with globalization? Is that a good idea?
Well, I think when you look at the statistic, which tells you 61% of all Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, up from 49% in 2008 and just 43% in 2007, and 36% of all Americans are no longer contributing towards their retirement savings, I think these numbers speak for themselves.
What should someone who has a job, has a home, has a family, has responsibilities, what should they do? I mean, I realize we cannot read the future. There are things that are going to happen we simply cannot predict. Somebody can, but it's not going to filter down to us. How can people prepare so that once they're prepared, it's not something that they have to just continually fret about and concern themselves over, well, is it enough? I mean, what can I do? You got people doing everything from stockpiling their, you know, stuff to take care of their primitive needs, everything from their firearms and their life. I was making a joke earlier, but it's really not a joke. Emergency food, emergency water, emergency this, emergency that. Everybody seems to think there's something headed our way. And all we can do is sort of hunker down and wait until something happens that we can react to. But how can people make themselves feel a little bit better, like they have some measure of financial security? I mean, is it just buy some gold and silver and buy it every chance you get?
Well, I think that's the first thing you do. But, you know, from the very first issue of the newsletter that I started writing in September 2009, I clearly indicated for my subscribers that we were in uncharted waters and unprecedented times, and we were going to see things take place over the next few years that we had to be prepared for. And the main concern was protecting what assets you had left, certainly reducing your debt. And if you've lost a job, certainly attempting to reinvent yourself and come back into the workforce. But, you know, when you look at the painful economic statistics of just the last couple of years, and I'll share these quickly with you, the wealthiest 20% of all Americans now control 84% of all the wealth in America, John. At the height of the Depression in 1932, 1% of the population controlled 59% of the wealth of America. Oof. Currently, over 50% of all the stocks and bonds, they're owned by only 1% of the population. Do you know that?
I did not know that until this moment.
Corporate profits as a percentage of GDP are at an all-time high. Wages as a percentage of GDP are at an all-time low. We also now have 1 out of 4 Americans working a job that pays less than $10 per hour. Healthcare costs have risen over the last 10 years 3 times faster than wages. This is a recipe for disaster. This cannot continue.
What do you make of this affordable healthcare situation? Is it affordable or is it like totally untenable?
Well, I think when you take a look at the long-term costs, I don't think the country can actually afford it. But the other side of the coin, when you look at the number of people that are uninsured, we certainly can't have these numbers without any form of health insurance.
Yes. Yes, that'll cost more in the long run.
Healthcare Absolutely. Has become so expensive for us all.
And a lot of doctors are quitting, closing their practices.
Yes, they
it's are. It's just plain strange. I just don't know. Now, keep in mind, everybody, that Joseph Meyer is a 30-year veteran of the securities industry, and he's worked as an arbitrator and a mediator for NASDAQ, and New York stock exchanges. So this isn't someone who is new with the game. How many years out do you...
When I was 19 years old in 1966, John, I bought my first 100 shares of stock. I went up on Wall Street in 1972. So I'm actually now 41 years on Wall Street.
That's pretty amazing. So when you make a plan, it seems like, you know, we admire... The last couple of guests have got me saying, you know, and I'm sorry. I'm trying to stop. I am.
You didn't say that tonight.
No, I've said it repeatedly and then brought it to everybody's attention again. We have this perception that the Far East, the Asians, make 100-year plans. They make 50-year plans. But over here, we make 48-month plans. We make 60-month plans. How far ahead should we be prepared to make our plans?
Well, you know, when you talk about bull and bear markets usually have a duration of 17 years to them, John. So when you talk about, you know, the previous bull market started in 1983 and ended in 2000, and then you talk about the prior bear market, 1966 to 1983, was 17 years. So this secular bear market here, having begun in 2000, probably has a number of years in which to run until we see the final bottom. You know, I said in the show I did in 2009 that I thought at a minimum we would retest the Dow levels 6470 and 670 in the S&P 500. And if I am right in that premise and that analysis, this market is going to be halved over the next 2 to 3 years, John. This market represents extraordinary risk. I think people should be very cautious. And you have to be in the right sectors of the market if you're going to remain fully invested. That's certainly the energy sector, the precious metals, the high-quality utilities, and the rails. But when you talk about gold and silver, we're in what we call a super cycle commodity bull, and these things only happen about every 30 to 40 years. And this is only now the sixth time in history that we've witnessed a commodity bull of this magnitude. And I think this commodity bull will run till 2018 to 2020, John.
Till 2020?
2020, yes. Now, I can name quickly for your listeners the five prior commodity bull markets and why I think this one will probably surpass them all. You had the first one, the War of 1812. The second one was the Civil War. Third one, World War One. Fourth one, World War II, Korea. Fifth one, the Cold War, and now the sixth time in history, the War on Terror, which began in 2001. So this is an extraordinary bull market. We're in the second half of it. Second halves of bull markets are usually much stronger than the first. So I think we're looking at significantly higher precious metal prices in the years ahead, John. And, you know, most people don't realize that gold went from 35 to 850, which was a multiple of 24. And if we look at the lows that we had seen in 1999 and 2000 with gold, 255 an ounce, you multiply it by 24, you get a potential bull market peak in gold, $6,120.
You know, we're running out of time here, and I'm sorry about that. We must bring you back sooner. It's not, I can tell you this, it's not going to be 17 months or whatever it's been until you come back. But let's see, can now people get your newsletter if they just go to straightmoneyanalysis.com?
They can get the newsletter by going to straightmoneyanalysis.com. And what I'm going to offer this evening, because of my respect for you as a talk show host, anybody signs up for the newsletter, they're not only going to get the current issue, which is February, I'm going to give them the January issue as a bonus, which outlines where I think these markets are headed in the years ahead.
Excellent. Joseph, take good care, my friend, and come back soon, will you?
Love to do it with you. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience, John.
Thank you, Joseph Meyer, straightmoneyanalysis.com. Go to the site. You'll be glad that you did. And he just made you a nice offer, too. Coming up next, Paul Stamets, all things mushrooms. They're not just for eating anymore, and they never were. This is Coast to Coast AM.